Now there was a pictures you had jobs, you know, jobs, and then had no IRS need to apply.
Yes.
You know, and that kind of reminded me that back in the South with Jim Crow.
Oh yes, absolutely. You can go back centuries in Ireland and, you know, see that discrimination over there. Of course, a lot of it is
this ethnic. In America?
That's America, oh. Yes. But the aristocracy here in the U.S. tends to be English and Scots-Irish. And, of course, they look down on the Irish Catholics in Ireland. So when they're over here and they're in charge, you know they're still going to look down on the Irish Catholics. And so, yes, there was blatant discrimination against the Irish, just as there were blacks. You know, that was a fact of life. Henry Burton, I've mentioned him. The legends of Henry in this town, he was notoriously anti-Irish Catholic until really the buildup for the Civil War, when he had no choice but to hold his nose and start hiring them because he needed the manpower. So, okay, he'll tolerate Irish Catholics, but he was Scottish Presbyterian. And, you know, Irish Catholics, oh, they're the term at that time is teg. It's the exact same phrase with a certain N-word that we don't use today. Teg, that's the term against the Irish. They're tegs. Ooh, yeah.
Now, let me ask you just a couple more questions, because I know you have to go. What was some of the areas in Troy that some of this history happened? Now, some of the streets or some of the...
Oh, well, I mean, the riot itself, I mean, literally comes all the way from Mill Street by Hudson Valley Community College today, all the way up to Mount Olympus, which is right there at North Street. Just south of you guys at the sanctuary, and then back downtown, and through the nighttime, it's mostly from downtown and south. But the draft riot is a very wide area. A lot of the real violence is all clustered downtown, but an awful lot of the manpower, the people who came in and got swept up in this whole thing, start in South Troy, down in what was known as the Iron District or Scotch Hill area. Especially early on, the south end of the city was sparsely populated. It's certainly not South Troy that we recognize today. Right down to the Post and Kill was fairly well occupied, but then there's a very large stretch from the Post and Kill down toward the foundries that is still farmland or pasture land, especially. Scattered businesses, but mostly it's wide open. If you look at the architecture there, it's pretty much post-Civil War. They came up to downtown because downtown was the center of everything, as it is. Well,
now, if someone wants to get some of that historical, you know, things about the draft right in Troy, where would they go get information?
The Troy Public Library here has got a number of the newspapers of the time on microfilm. Those are the best source you're going to find. But the one thing you always have to pay attention to is the newspapers of that day were very, very partisan. Most newspapers were in support of a political party of one stripe or another. So if you're reading the Troy Daily Times, I mean, this is the Republican newspaper. And if you're taking what they have to say as if it's gospel truth, you're going to make a serious mistake in checking your history. You need to counterbalance it by looking at the others. That's one of the issues about doing historical research at these times. Back when, well, I like to think most media today is relatively neutral, but that's not true in the Civil War period. And so, I mean, there's some really, really stringent news editorials and news stories about the rioters. You know, they're these hopelessly heathen, slope-headed Irish Catholics, you know, who can't even breathe and walk at the same time. And really, that's my people you're talking about, right? But so you need to take an awful lot of that with a big grain of salt, but that's the primary source. This city really needs a good written account of our draft riot. An awful lot of people say, well, Michael, you should do that. Yes, in my spare time. Yeah, let's see, Sunday afternoon. Oh, no, I don't have spare time on a Sunday afternoon. I'm down here. Yes, at some point, hopefully I'll retire and I'll sit down and I'll start writing stuff, but it's, we really do need, what we need is some nice young historians to get swept up in this and to start putting this stuff down on, well, not paper. I mean, I realize how much I'm dating myself when I say that, but at least write for, you know, the blog sites and the websites and the, yes, get this stuff down. 'Cause an awful lot of historians, and I'm not a trained historian, I'm a historian by choice, but you know, when we're gone, you know, if my kids take all my files and throw them away, there's 40 years of research that's gone. So hopefully they're all going to a repository somewhere. And my kids, you know, I'm using a bad example with me. My kids recognize that my files, you know, if I go face down tonight, should go somewhere. Right. They're not going to chuck them, please.
But, well, maybe, you know, kids coming up, you know, well, they want to get involved in historical matters. Maybe this is something that they could do.
Yep, it is happening. It's gratifying in a sense that, yes, there are some very bright young historians who are coming out. And I actually just had a young lady in the museum the other day. She's working on a master's in museum studies down in Rhode Island. And she was home for a weekend and wanted to come and see the museum. And, you know, she said to me, well, I've got a half an hour. Can you really show me around in a half an hour? I said, sure, I can. You know, I can. 3.5 hours later, I'm throwing her out the door because I have a dinner date. You know, it's just like last call. Get out of my museum. But this is a young lady that whoever gets her, whatever job she finds after she gets her master's, somebody's going to be very lucky. I mean, just for 3.5 hours, excellent questions, and really, you could just tell she's percolating. She's excited. She's, oh, okay. Ooh, yes.
Right. Yeah. Just one last question.
Yes.
And I want to ask you, because I know you're the executive director, and we should ask this, of the Hudson Mohawk Industrial Gateway, and I know that's the institute got some history behind it. So let's say people want to come there to get some information or to just learn about that. What do you have to say about
it? We'd love to have, you know, I'd love to have people in the museum. The biggest problem we have at the Burden Museum, which is what we run, it's a one-person operation. So we really strongly suggest that you make an appointment, you know, call ahead, email ahead, only because if you show up completely unannounced and I'm out at something else, you're out of luck. And so I always stress that. I hate to have, you know, come in after a meeting and somebody's on my machine saying, oh, we were there ringing the doorbell and nobody answered. Well, that's because you didn't tell me you were coming.
And what's the telephone number?
Area code 518-274-5267.
And the email?
Or email is info@HudsonMohawkGateway.org. That's all one word, Hudson Mohawk Gateway, just as it sounds. But yep, and those, of course, I can answer at 10, 11 o'clock at night. So email's a wonderful way to reach us. But, you know, we love to have people in. I'm actually just doing my numbers for last year for our annual report, and we had just under 1,800 visitors in 2018, and that's the lightest year I've had in a while. This year looks like it's going to be substantially more than that. We have a lot of people. People like this. We have fun there. It's just somebody's not sitting there twiddling their thumbs waiting for, yes.
Well, you might have one of those young historians get in touch with you.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so.
And there you have it.
I'm always looking. I'm actually wondering who's going to replace me because I'm getting a little long in the tooth here.
Yeah. We all, right?
Oh, yes.
And there you have it. Michael P. Barron, who's executive director of the Hudson Mohawk Industrial Gateway. And he's asking anyone out there to do something on the draft ride of 1863. And you could come and see him. He's a historian himself.
There you go.
Nice, right, thank
to
you,
see
Mike.
You again. We'll take care.
All right, thank you, Mike.
It's a pleasure.